Hey, I'm Haley Crowley, founder and CEO of Whimsy and Wellness, and this is the Whimsy and Wellness Podcast, your happy place for health. We're on a mission to make the world a healthier and happier place. Join us each week as we take our love for natural health and wellness into fascinating conversations focusing on greater health and happiness. Here's to a little more whimsy and wellness in your life. Now here's your host, Meg Ryan.
Okay, friend, before we dive into today's episode, I have to tell you about my new favorite ingredient in my morning smoothies, Athletic Greens. Athletic Greens is our one-stop shop supplement in that it contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, including a multivitamin, multimineral, probiotic, green superfood blend, and more. I don't know about you, but while I always have great intentions of keeping up with my vitamins and supplements, I always forget to take all those capsules. With Athletic Greens, I get everything I need in one easy scoop. It's also lifestyle friendly, so whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, you can enjoy it too. It also contains less than 1 gram of sugar without compromising on taste. Haley and I are both incredibly passionate about product sourcing and clean ingredients, and that's why we love Athletic Greens. They invest in the most absorbable and natural sorts of each ingredient and go above and beyond in third-party testing, strict analytical and microbiological testing, and have the highest quality standards. Athletic Greens is exclusively offering our Whimsy Wellness podcast listeners, you, a free one-year supply of vitamin D along with 5 free travel packs with your first purchase when you shop with our link, athleticgreens.com/whimsy. So join Haley and I in filling the nutritional gaps in our diet, increasing our energy and focus, aid with digestion, and supporting our immune systems with one daily scoop of Athletic Greens and your year's supply of vitamin D and 5 travel packs at athleticgreens.com/whimsy. Okay, now let's dive into this week's episode.
Okay, friends, today we are talking all about change. Does change make everyone else feel a little bit of butterflies in their stomach? It definitely gives me some butterflies. But change can be good, and we are learning all about change today from cognitive behavioral scientist, Dr. Maya Shankar. Dr. Maya is a cognitive behavioral scientist, like I just said. She served as a senior advisor in the Obama White House, where she founded and served the chair of the White House Behavioral Science Team. Maya has a postdoctoral fellowship in cognitive neuroscience at Stanford, a PhD from Oxford on a Rhodes Scholarship, and a BA from Yale. She is the host, creator, and executive producer of the new podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, from Pushkin's Industries. If you enjoy the Whimsy and Wellness podcast, make sure you're subscribed so you never miss an episode. And if you haven't already, please, please take just 2 minutes to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Haley and I read every single review, and they really do make such a huge difference in helping our show continue to grow and reach more listeners like you. So thank you so much for listening along. I'm really grateful for you. Let's jump in to my conversation with Dr. Maya Shankar. Okay, well, welcome to the Whimsy and Wellness podcast, Maya.
It's so nice to be here, Meg. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you. This is just really exciting. I am already obsessed with this topic, and we haven't even jumped in. So you have quite the profound story. Do you want to kind of walk us through that and tell us your story starting back from when you were a little girl?
Yeah, definitely. So when I was 6 years old, my mom went up to her attic and brought down my grandmother's violin, which she had brought with her all the way from India when she immigrated here in the 70s. And she just meant to show me the instrument, but was pretty fascinated by the fact that I was so taken by it so quickly. I loved the way that it sounded. I loved the way that it felt. And my mom said that she could just sense in me this incredible passion. And so I very quickly asked for a pint-sized violin of my own. And that began my journey as a violinist. So when I was 9 years old, I auditioned for the Juilliard School of Music's pre-college program and was very fortunately accepted. And then when I was a teenager, Itzhak Perlman, my violin role model, asked me to be his private violin student. And so that's when things really picked up for me, because as I'm sure many of your listeners can relate to, when you're in a really competitive environment, you could feel all the insecurities and anxieties about whether you have what it takes to make it work. And having Perlman's vote of confidence really helped me see, hey, maybe I could be a professional violinist. So I was on the speed train and I was absolutely committed to going pro and having violin be my life. And then when I was 15, it was just an early morning, summer morning, I was at music camp at the Perlman music program. And I just overstretched a single note and I heard a popping sound in my hand. And doctors quickly told me, we don't think you're ever going to be able to play the violin again. And I was just totally devastated by this diagnosis, because what I realized in that moment was such a core part of my identity was playing the violin. I was first and foremost a violinist. And so I started to ask myself all these existential questions I'd never asked myself before. Who am I without the violin? What does it even mean for me to be me without this pursuit? There's this interesting finding in psychology, and it's called identity foreclosure. And it refers to the fact that in adolescence, and certainly in adolescence, it can carry through with you as you go into adulthood, we can feel really fixed in our sense of self-identity from an early age. And it can prevent us from having an open mind about all the other identities that we could, in theory, have in this world. And so I certainly fell prey to identity foreclosure. And I think what's so interesting looking back is that losing this thing that I loved so much at an early age forced me to see my identity as more malleable than I had, and forced me to see beyond my life as a violinist and to explore other parts of my life. And certainly I felt that served me well as I've navigated lots of twists and turns ever since.
Wow. I really like that perspective of, you know, it kind of forcing you to reevaluate your identity and knowing, okay, I am someone so much deeper than a violinist. Because I think just going back to high school or even before that, when we just start getting asked, what do you want to do when you grow up? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And so that do, we just start believing that's who we are, right? What we do is who we are. And it's not, it's who do you want to be? Not what do you want to do? So I really like that perspective.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think what this taught me is that it's much more sustainable to attach yourself to traits and features of things that you love versus the thing itself. And what I learned really only as I got older, I'd always thought that it was the violin that I loved. That was the thing that I loved. And I did love it. I loved the sound it made. I loved playing. But actually, the thing that really captivated me as a violinist was so effortlessly being able to forge an emotional connection with people that I'd never met before. So even as a little kid, right, you go on stage, there's thousands of people in the audience. You've never met any of these people before. They've never met you. And within moments, you can have this incredible emotional bond through the notes that you're performing. And so it was actually that emotional intimacy that I was feeling with others that was really exciting to me, because I was fascinated by the fact that humans can feel that. And that's ultimately what led me to pivot after I lost the violin and discover the world of cognitive science, which is all about how it is that we make decisions and develop our attitudes and beliefs about the world and come to feel the things that we feel and come to think the things that we think. And the summer before college, I was supposed to be in China Bag touring with my violin classmates. And instead, I was in my parents' basement helping them clean. So equally great experience over the summer. And so I stumbled upon a book on the science of how the mind works. And my mind just lit up, because as I described to you, I feel like the fundamental thing that really got me excited about the violin was that you could make people feel something. And that to me was really a testament to the fact that I'm just fascinated by the human mind, generally speaking. And so when I read that book, I realized, oh, wow, I think this could be my new thing, right? Understanding how it is that people work, what makes us tick, how we overcome barriers. In many ways, it was an inspiration for my new podcast, The Slight Change of Plans, which is all about how people have navigated extraordinary changes in their life and have found ways to overcome those changes. And what I've loved about the podcast is that it's giving me that same emotional, intimate bond with people that I experience as a violinist. So I have license to go into a room with the guests on my show have been Hillary Clinton and Tiffany Haddish and Casey Musgraves and Tommy Caldwell. And I can go in and say, hey, Hillary, I know we just met, but do you mind sharing what the hardest moment of your life was or what your biggest insecurities are? And it's incredible to feel connected to people through this show. So to wrap up this point, I mean, I think, Meg, what I've learned is if you can identify features of something that you really love, if you lose that thing, you can still find those features in other activities, in other hobbies or pursuits or passions. And I feel that is the common thread that weaves together the various things that I've endeavored to do in my life. And if there's one insight I would want to share with your listeners, it's exactly that. And I kind of learned it through just living, but I feel like it's really helped me in hard moments.
Yeah, no, that is beautiful. And this is so ironic. I feel like I'm having this do-do-do-do-do-do-do moment. Because this morning I listened to a podcast from Jay Shetty, and he was talking about purpose and passion and all of that. And he was saying that if you think of purpose being an adult and passion being a teenager and curiosity and interest being a child, and what's my purpose? And that's such a loaded question, right? Most people are just like, I don't know. But if you go back to the child of purpose is interests. And so just what you were saying with the violin, my mind was being blown as you were saying that, because I couldn't believe I listened to that.
That's so cool. And also ironically, I'm literally flying to LA tomorrow to be on Jay Shetty's show. He's going to be interviewing me. So yes, it's a very small world of ideas out there.
Okay, that is so cool. Okay. I'm interested to know when you started viewing your career-ending hand injury as more of an opportunity, or even as an opportunity rather than just a heartbreaking and dream-crushing occurrence. When did that kind of shift to, oh, maybe this is an opportunity?
Yeah, I love that question. And it's so important for me to not romanticize or glamorize that period of my life, because I was pissed and I was heartbroken and devastated. And I was despondent. I was absolutely convinced I was not going to find something that I loved as much as the violin. And so I stayed in that mopey teenager mindset for quite some time. One thing that was so important for me was trying to have as open a mind as I possibly could. So talking with as many people as I could about what it is that they did, reading books. There was no podcast back then. I would have listened probably to so many podcasts to try to just figure out. It's almost a numbers game. If you meet enough other things, you might find one, you know, that is similar to dating, right? It's like, if you meet enough people, you'll probably find someone that's compatible with you, hopefully. But I do feel the same way about passions in life, which is if you acquaint yourself with a broad range, ideas and narratives and passions, something will click for you. It might be not be the exact instantiation that you see, but some element of it will ignite curiosity in you. And I think that's what I was looking for. And that's what I found in the book that day when I was reading. I was like, I have a fundamental curiosity. I want to learn more. And this feels like the kind of book that I would read for fun, which is not something I felt all the time. There were lots of books I was forced to read in high school that I absolutely did not enjoy. And so this felt different in some way. I think the other thing that allowed me to see an opportunity from it is finding people in my life that I admired and staying close to them and understanding how their lives unfolded was a huge source of inspiration for me. So one person in particular played this role. Her name is Laurie Santos. Some of your listeners might listen to her podcast called The Happiness Lab. And it's an incredible show in which they distill insights about how it is that you can be happier. And she was my freshman year advisor in college. And I remember looking up to Laurie so much, right? She's a professor of psychology at Yale. And I remember I heard that she had a monkey lab. And I was so eager to be in this monkey lab because I was, you know, like, oh my gosh, it's so cool that there's even this lab where you can study the mind, but you can study the mind in non-human primates. This is so exciting. I can't believe this is an opportunity. So I show up to her class on day one and the room is overflowing. There's like 80 people. I'm the lowly freshman being like, give me the chance. And there's all these upperclassmen and seniors who are like, no, please wait your turn. So there's an application process and I just sold my soul on this form. I was like, Laurie, you can have my unborn children. I'll do the 6 a.m. shift in New Haven on Saturdays. You know, I was just like, anything it takes, please give me this opportunity. And I was so lucky because I was the only freshman she accepted that year. She could clearly tell how enthusiastic I was, but she gave me that early break. And it totally changed my life because not only was the door open for me for so many real life opportunities that could give me a sense that this was a moment of change that I could embrace. But I was also now surrounding myself with someone who I so deeply admired and I could learn from. So I think it was the coupling of finding something that I was curious about, but then finding a person that I was curious about who could help lead the way for me. It was that magic combo that I think was a turning point for me.
Love that so much. And I actually do love Lori's podcast.
Oh, that's so great.
Okay. So I mentioned in your intro that you're a cognitive behavioral scientist now, right? So let's talk about change because yikes, just the word change, people are like, ooh, I'll sit over here with certainty.
In making my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I want all my listeners to know that I feel them. I am a type A planner through and through. I love certainty. I love stability. And my recent inspiration from this show, obviously there was my personal experience with change and there's my lens as a cognitive scientist where I study change. But the true catalyst for this was in 2020, I was feeling completely overwhelmed by the change that was happening around me. And I know so many people were feeling overwhelmed by the change happening around them. It was this profound moment in the world where it was made so salient to all of us that we are not in control, right? We might like to believe that we're in control. The control is an illusion. And it's rare that as a world, we have this collective shared moment where we all feel the same thing. And so I was feeling intimidated and overwhelmed and just tons of feelings of uncertainty and anxiety. And then I put on my cognitive science hat for a moment and I thought to myself, you know, while the specifics of what 2020 are throwing our way might be unprecedented, our ability as humans to navigate change is not. And that's a really important thing to remember. In many ways, our minds are built for change. And we've done this rodeo many times before as a civilization and also just as human beings going through our lives, experiencing lots of expected and unexpected change. And then I thought to myself, but there's no answer. It's not like there's a textbook out there. Like I'm a scientist, but you can't find a textbook out there when you're going through a big change where you open it up to page 90 and it's like, ah, here's the answer of how I should handle whatever it is that I'm going through, whether it's a medical diagnosis, the end of a relationship, a new job, the loss of someone that we love in our lives, right? So many things can hit us in life. And so I thought, why don't I try and mine people's stories for insights, right? People who have gone through extraordinary change and can teach us something interesting about how it is that they've gone through their lives navigating change. And I will tell you, Meg, it has been the most humbling experience to do this podcast because, and I'm so excited to talk about some of these lessons with you, I have learned so much from my guests about change. And I think about change so differently as a result of hearing their story that it's just been a gift. It's been a gift for me, even on a personal level, to enrich my own understanding of what change is like in my life and how to think about change differently. And I hope listeners have the same experience.
Yeah. I listened to one episode. I think her name was also Megan, your guest.
Yes. Megan Phelps-Roper.
Yes. Yes. I listened to that one and it was so good. So I need to dig into more, but I just randomly chose that one because she had the same name as me. So it must be good right now.
Yeah. Her story is a fascinating one where she grew up in this hate group called the Westboro Baptist Church and was really steeped in their ideology. She was one of their most ardent believers, one of their most vocal advocates. And then it's kind of a miraculous story, but she ends up changing her mind about the entire church and the entire ideology in her mid-20s and leaves the church. And in leaving the church, she leaves her entire family behind and basically everything she had ever believed to be true. So it is a startling story of change and basically having to start your life afresh and cultivate a whole new set of beliefs and mindsets. But yeah, wow. I'm actually so glad that you chose that one to listen to before our conversation because Megan's story was my pilot episode, actually. She was the first person I ever interviewed for this show. And she helped me to see the potential of A Slight Change of Plans and see, I actually think there is a show here. So I'm really grateful to her for giving me that.
Yeah, that is fascinating. So can we dive into kind of the science of change? I guess, I don't know if it
was. Absolutely.
So I feel like there's obviously change that happens that's just awful, right? You mentioned some examples of maybe trauma or loss or just terrible change. And fearing and avoiding that kind of change kind of makes sense because who wants to suffer, right? No one's going out. I am open to that kind of change. But we also know that there's good change and that can help us grow and all of that good stuff. So how can we avoid fearing change so much, right? Because whether we know it's good for us or not, we still kind of avoid it and fear it. Or I guess maybe before sharing how we can avoid it, maybe could you share why we fear and avoid change so much?
Yeah, I mean, there's a cognitive science principle called the status quo bias, and it basically refers to the fact that we really love business as usual, how things are going right now. And we can make lots of irrational decisions and choices just to preserve the status quo, to avoid the uncertainty and risk that one takes with a change. One thing that my guests have taught me, Meg, is that the line between a willed and an unwilled change and a bad and a good change is actually a lot blurrier than I thought. I used to categorize change in the way that you just described. So I'll give you two concrete examples from the show. So I interviewed this woman named Elna Baker, whose lifelong goal was to become thin. She felt that if she could become thin, every door would open for her in life and she would be able to live out her dream life. And she did it. She lost close to 100 pounds in 5.5 months. And for a while, she did believe that she was living her dream life until she realized that change doesn't happen in a vacuum. When you change one narrow part of yourself, it doesn't just exist in isolation with all the other parts of yourself unaffected. It can have all sorts of spillover effects into other parts of who you are. And what she found is that she was slowly losing herself in the process too, not just losing weight. She felt she was a worse person. She felt more superficial. Interestingly, she felt more self-conscious than she had before. She had lost her boldness and irreverence. She didn't feel she was standing up for the things that she believed in and was kind of buying into a system that just didn't align with her values. And so that was a very important reminder for me that sometimes the changes that we will, that we believe will be good, can have all sorts of negative side effects that we simply can't predict in advance. And what that taught me is that we need to approach change of any kind with a profound amount of humility and an openness and almost an auditing mindset, right? Where we're just constantly assessing ourselves holistically along the way to make sure that we're not changing in ways that we don't desire, right, along the way. And the flip side of that is I interviewed a young man named Scott. He's a cancer researcher, and he's also a self-proclaimed health nut. So if there's research out there that something's beneficial for your health, he's done it. High-intensity interval training, intermittent fasting, he's vegan, he adds turmeric and chia seeds to his food. He's been absolutely committed to preserving his health. And then in 2020, he received a stage 4 bone cancer diagnosis that led him within weeks to have to get his leg amputated. He had to pack up his bags in California and move to MD Anderson in Texas for inpatient chemotherapy rounds, 2 additional surgeries, including removing a vertebra from his spine. And this was Scott's worst nightmare. He had spent his entire adult life trying to avoid this outcome. And here it was in his face. And what he told me as he's sitting there drinking a cup of coffee, sitting outside, I more or less feel as happy as I did before, Maya. That's what he told me. He said, it's the emotional thermostat has prevailed. And yeah, you know, the lows are lower. I have much more acute bouts of pain and discomfort from the nausea and pain of all my treatments. But the good moments are just as good. And if I had known that I would respond in this way psychologically, I may never have been as fearful of cancer as I had been in the first place. I mean, it's stirring for me to even repeat that quote, but it showed me that, at least for Scott, I mean, this is not everyone's story, of course, but at least for Scott, he really surprised himself in the way that he responded. And going back to the humility piece of all this, it just reminds us that when we predict how we're going to feel in the future, we're only basing that prediction on our current and understanding of ourselves, right? All the data points that we've collected about ourselves up until that moment in time. And we don't actually know what other parts of ourselves exist and could be tapped into in the face of a big change. And that's corroborated by the research showing that we're really bad cognitive forecasters. We do a terrible job predicting how different life events will affect us, right? We think terrible events will derail us forever, but we're far more resilient in the face of those negative changes. And we think specific positive events will transform our lives forever, but actually we find people returning back to their happiness set points fairly quickly after a great event has happened. And so I do find that it's just an interesting set of lessons that my guests have taught me.
Those are both such beautiful stories. I love that. And how often do we say, I could never do that, right? We see someone going through something hard or handling something with such grace for themselves and others, and we say, I could never do that. And I think we don't give ourselves enough credit, or we just don't want to imagine that we could, right? It's like, I don't want to believe I could, because that seems so painful.
Well said. Yeah, that's so well said.
You know that dreaded time each month when your period comes and you're stuck dealing with cramps? It's the worst and so inconvenient. I've struggled with painful period cramps for years, but I actually haven't had any discomfort during my period in 3 months. I know it sounds too good to be true, but a few months ago I tried out the Jovi patch that I've been hearing so much about, and you guys, it works. Jovi has no wires, no magnets, harmful rays. You don't even have to charge it, nothing. You simply place your Jovi patch in the not so sweet spot, and the energy caused by discomfort is soaked up like a sponge, balancing the body's electrical field and leaving you with this warming comfort for period problems and more. It is seriously magical. Your patch will last you a lifetime as long as you don't lose it, so you only ever have to buy one. And guess what? Jovi is giving our Whimsy and Wellness podcast listeners 10% off. That's $20 off your patch. Just head to their website, meetjovi.com, that's meetjovi.com, and use code Whimsy, WHIMSY, at checkout for your exclusive discount. That's meetjovi.com with code Whimsy. Okay, friend, get ready to kiss your period cramps goodbye. Now, let's get back to this week's episode. So I want to ask you about a phrase that might rock the boat for some listeners, because I feel like people either really believe in this or they're with me where it kind of rubs them the wrong way. So I don't judge people who feel strongly in this, but for me, that expression, everything happens for a reason. I'm curious your kind of take on it, because I think in certain instances, I wholeheartedly believe in it, right? Like flat tires or being laid off or those kinds of things. I can go with this happened for a reason, right? Oftentimes I'll be running late even, and then I'll see a car accident once I do get on my way. And I think to myself, maybe I was late because of that. I do think like that. However, there's certain things that just make me where I almost draw the line where I can't say this happened for a reason. For example, in my own life, my former boyfriend who died by suicide, it's hard for me to say he died at 21 by suicide for a reason. Or a child passing away, it's hard for me to say that's for a reason. But I understand that some people, it's for religious or spiritual beliefs, that they wholeheartedly believe in that. And I respect that so much. But with your background, I'm just kind of curious, what's your take and your thoughts on, does everything happen for a reason? Or yeah, what's your view on it?
My personal view is that things don't happen for a reason. I just can't get behind that, because I see tragedy befall too many good people out in the world. And it's impossible to defend that a terrible thing like the loss of a child or illness struck them because they were meant to learn something. Sometimes I wish I felt things happen for a reason. It would make me live a happier life potentially with more equanimity and peace, but I've never been able to see things as happening for a reason. Now that said, I do think that we as humans are natural storytellers. So whatever your spiritual or non-spiritual beliefs, whatever your religious or non-religious beliefs, as humans, we like to build narratives around our lives and to explain why things might have happened to us and to try to find meaning in certainly bad change, because it just helps us process the change and it helps us try to see silver linings when we can, in fact, assign a narrative. So like I said, I don't think things happen for a reason, but does that not mean that when a bad thing happens to me, I don't try to find an opportunity in that bad event or try to find a silver lining or try to find meaning? Of course I do. I absolutely do, because I think it is an irresistible part of human nature to do that. And so I've certainly felt when I've interviewed folks for the podcast that no matter, again, what their spiritual beliefs are, it seems like everybody has tried to find meaning in their adversity and tragedy and have grown from it in some way. It was so interesting. Scott, the cancer patient I mentioned, said, you know, it'd be such a tragedy if my body was getting worse through this whole process and then my personality also got worse. So he's like, I'm committed to becoming a better person so that at least there's something beneficial that comes out of all this. And like me, he also doesn't think things happen for a reason, but he does believe that one can try to find opportunities for growth out of those moments. So yeah, I don't know whether maybe listeners won't like my answer, my personal belief on this, but you know, certainly coming from the perspective of scientist, I just, yeah, it's hard for me to reconcile things happening for a reason with all of the tragedy that I see in the world around me.
Right. I agree. I loved how you worded your response though. And I'm not sure if you, have you heard of Megan Devine before? She's a grief author. She has a great book called It's Okay to Not Be Okay, I think. And she has this quote that's something, or I guess I wouldn't call it a quote, but she always says in videos and in her book how that expression, I think the reason it can deeply hurt, whether it's the grieving or someone who's deeply sick or lost their home or just something terrible has happened, when we say things like, that happened for a reason, or you'll be a better person because of it. She words it in this way of, I still would have been a good person if this didn't happen, right? If I didn't lose my person or this horrible thing happened, I would still be the person I am deep down, right? I didn't need that thing to happen to be the great person I am. And I love that explanation for, I guess I just wanted to share that for maybe listeners who are thinking, what? Yes, they do. Everything does happen for a reason. I definitely hold space for those who do strongly believe in that and just love that we can all come from different angles at it. I think it's all so interesting.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Look, life is hard. And so I have a pretty practical view about all this, which is you do you. If telling a story about your life is the thing that works for you, if believing things happen for a reason works for you, I think just whatever allows a person to prosper and be kind and generous to others and to themselves, you know, that's great. That's my general view. So I think, like you said, I have a lot of respect for the way that different people live their lives. I think actually as coming from a background of psychology and cognitive science, it's the greatest empathy builder. You can appreciate all the diverse ways in which people go through their lives without judgment. And I certainly fall into the camp of, you know, having my own personal views on something and always wanting to be honest about what those are, but also fully appreciating the different ways in which people live their lives and the perspectives they have.
So there are times in our lives when we know, whether it's super obvious or maybe it's just this little whisper deep down, that we need to make a change, right? And yet we often still avoid it. Maybe because we fear the unknowns of making the change, or we don't know what the change needs to happen, right? Sometimes we think, I have to make a change, but I have no idea what the change is. So when we're going through this, how can we honor that inner knowing of, I need to make a change? How can we know what the change needs to be or how to go about it?
Yeah, I mean, there's no one size fits all answer. In this case, I think the one piece of reassurance that I've gotten from all my guests who have gone through lots of change that they either knew they needed to do, but they were too nervous to do for a while. For example, I couldn't believe it, but I was talking with Hillary Clinton and she was saying she wasn't always the Hillary Clinton we see today. She said that she realized after she left the White House as first lady that maybe she was too afraid to run for office, that all these things she was telling other women, you should, you know, push your limits and try to get these offices and do great work in the world. She maybe wasn't believing herself about her own self. And she talks about this really poignant moment where she's at an event and this basketball player leans down and whispers into her ear, dare to compete, Mrs. Clinton, dare to compete. And it was that moment where she realized that she just needed to do this. Someone just had to tell her in her life that she had what it took and that she needed to challenge her own insecurities. You know, she talks openly about the fact that she wasn't sure that she had what it took and that, you know, it might be challenging for her to occupy this role. And first of all, I loved her sharing that vulnerability, but it showed me that we all have this trepidation. And sometimes it just takes a person asking us that question or daring us to compete, to take that big leap. And I by and large found among my guests that they are happy that a change happened in some way or another, right? They might not feel like on average it was good that the thing happened, but they do feel in some way that they grew from the experience. and saw the world differently and became a better person in some way or another.
I love that response. And our inner knowing is so wise if we just listen. I know sometimes I just mute mine out, because sometimes even if you're in a really hard situation where you know you have to change, and you even maybe know that the change will make things better, it's almost like the bad situation, even though it's bad, it's comfortable because you know enough about it that the change, even though you know it's good, it's hard to take the leap because it's like, where are we going? Okay, so if someone's listening to this right now who's really struggling with a big change, maybe an injury like yours or a loss or something big in their lives, what encouragement would you pour over them as they kind of walk this journey of change?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I've certainly learned from hearing all of my guests on A Slight Change of Plans is that we kind of chronically underestimate our resilience. I think we see a lot of resilience in others, but it's really hard for us to see ourselves as incredibly resilient. And I will say that one thing, in addition to feeling they learned something or grew from a change experience, I think one thing every one of my guests on the show has experienced is surprise at the way that they handled a change, surprise in the face of a change. And I love that element of surprise because it means that maybe we're just a lot more capable than we think we are. You know, maybe the storytelling part of our brain will allow us to create a new opportunity from a bad change or see new meaning in it that changes our perspective on the world. And that has been a lovely thing for me to see, because when everyone feels that they've been surprised in some way, it does make me feel like it's a more universal trait that we are more resilient than we give ourselves credit for.
I recently heard a journal prompt that you write a letter to yourself. So you'd write, "Dear Megan, this is your resilience, and this is what I want you to know." And you write to yourself the resilience that you have. What have you overcome? And I thought that was so beautiful, because just what you said, we credit people all the time. That person is so resilient. My sister, my brother. And rarely do we stop to say, whoa.
That's so beautiful. I love the letter writing to self. That's amazing.
So our mission with the Whimsy Wellness Podcast is to help make the world a healthier and happier place. We want our show to be like listeners' happy place for health. So to wrap up, are you ready for some health and happiness questions?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Bring it on.
So we actually don't pursue a topic for our show if we don't strongly believe that it will make someone listening either happier and or healthier. So what would you say is just one way, maybe the biggest way, that you think your topic of change and embracing change can make the world a happier and or healthier place?
Yeah, I think it can make us a happier, healthier place, because change is one of those rare human universals. Nobody is immune to change, and you can have everything in the world, but that uncertainty, that change will still plague you. And I think, again, you know, 2020 kind of made salient that we are all in this collective change moment together, but we didn't really need that reminder, right? We experience change each and every day of our lives. And sometimes it's profound change, sometimes it's small changes that add up and in aggregate feel like a really big change. And I really hope that the more we learn about change, the more I can share these stories on A Slight Change of Plans, the more camaraderie we'll feel with one another, that we're all kind of going through this together. Because even though the specifics of each of our own life changes might be different, I think the psychology that we recruit in the face of change and the lessons and insights we bring to those change experiences can be quite similar. And so there's a lot to learn from one another and a lot of unity to feel.
What is something you do for yourself for the simple fact that it makes you either happy or healthier?
So I cherish my morning cup of Indian style tea. I make my chai every morning. It has ginger and cardamom and creamer. And I have my own separate time and space for that tea. Like, no one's allowed to interfere with my morning tea. I want to be sitting, and it's almost a meditative experience for me to have that morning cup or two. And I really protect that time because it just helps center me every morning. And it also just connects me with my family. My mom is a huge tea lover. She had her morning cup or two every morning, and she also held it sacred. I think as a kid, I was like, why is this so important to you? And now as an adult, I see myself becoming my mom, where my husband will come in and I'll be like, Jimmy, I'm having my morning cup. You're not allowed to interrupt me. And I'm like, oh yes, this is what, that's why women say they become their moms.
I so relate. Okay. On the kind of the topic, we were talking about drinks. So let's now talk about food. What late night snack makes you happiest?
Ooh, oh gosh, there's so many. So I'm more of a salty person versus a sweet person. So anything in that domain of jalapeno kettle potato chips, that's one of my faves. Mozzarella sticks also fits into that domain. Yeah, basically anything that has a lot of oil and salt will get me excited. So, oh, beer battered French fries or curly fries. Those are my favorite. What about you? I'm curious. I love food. So I'm curious to know what yours are.
Yeah, so I'm sure the listeners are so tired of hearing me talk about Justin's peanut butter cups.
Oh, yes. Those are amazing.
We've tried to get them to sponsor the show, but if anyone knows Justin.
I love that so much.
I'm like, we talk about you very freely.
It's so funny.
But in the summer months, ice cream, I've kind of been on an ice cream kick.
Oh, what's your favorite flavor? So mine's mint chocolate chip. It's my go-to.
Oh, yes. That's mine. I love mint. Have you had mint tingling? I think Perry's make it.
Oh, no, I've never tried that.
It's a cookie crunch in it instead of a chocolate
chip. Oh, that sounds amazing. Yeah, here I am saying I'm more of a salty versus sweet, but obviously I've got some sweet tooth in me that I definitely enjoy.
I like both, right?
Yeah, I definitely enjoy mint chocolate chip.
Yes. I feel like this is the question that I ask everyone, the late night snack, and I'm sure listeners are just starving. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Talking about these. Right. I'm now hungry. I'm going to go eat something right after this.
Yes. Okay. And the last one is easy. Where can people continue to learn more from you? Tell us about your podcast. We've talked about it throughout the show, but give us a little bit more info of how we can keep listening to it and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's called A Slight Change of Plans. I'm in love with making this show. It's just been an utter joy to get to talk to people that I admire and find so fascinating. And you can find the show wherever you find podcasts. So on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio. And if you do A Slight Change of Plans, please share it with people and subscribe. I love for the word to get out about the show. I think we have so much we could learn from it.
Yes, definitely. People's stories can change the world, I believe. So I love that. Are you on social media? Can people follow you there?
Yeah. So our Twitter is Slight Change Pod and Instagram is A Slight Change.
Perfect.
And then my website is mayashankar.com.
Perfect. We'll put all of this in the show notes for you guys listening and link Maya's podcast so you can give it a listen. And thank you so, so much for coming on, Maya. This has been a real treat.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Meg. I really loved our conversation.
Thank you.
Wow, I love these amazing conversations we get to have. I hope you heard something today that inspired you, that made you smile, and that brought just a little more happiness into your life. If you love this podcast, will you help other people find it? You can do that in two really easy ways. First, take a minute right now to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to me right now. Second, take a screenshot of this episode and share it on Instagram. Don't forget to tag us. Your honest reviews and recommendations go a lot further with people than you think, and we can't thank you enough.